Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
It is the evening, and I know you think that we're late, but it was actually a great deal of planning and for us to not start exactly at 7, because we're trying to break certain habits that we have of being on time every time. And we just thought, you know, what are we going to do, what are we going to do? And so we worked it out.
Yes, we did.
And
we had a pre-conference.
With great skill, we were able to withhold the impulse of being ritualistically correct. I don't know what Dan's doing over there. He's in his own world. Dan was having technical difficulties in his typing, it sounds like. But anyway, we're here. It's Wednesday night, and it's time for The American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. Now, here's the thing. We've been doing a session on Wednesday night, roughly at 7 o'clock, for many years now. We have created a furrow in the ground. We have actually created a space that several of us come to out of a certain rapidity. It's like we know that space is there. And since you know the space is there, people are able to come and visit that space, right? And they kind of know that when they come to the space, that there's a certain environment that they can count on. Reflect, I won't ask you to answer, though I might ask George this, Silverdale, in a little while. Why is that? Why is that true? Because it is true. I don't know how many people are on, Dan? 14 people, and there's 30, 40 people here, something like that. Maybe not that many. I don't count well. Anyway, and the point of it is that this is what occurs at this time. So a voyager can begin to get sensitized to a certain rhythmic pulsation and find a stroke when it's needed to. And since they have no physical body, we're reading this material, right? And we read it, and we think, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, when I was driving today, I heard this, and I kind of yelled at this other person. Well, the voyager may want to do that, but it's a little hard to find your voice when you are an electrical beam careening through what the Tibetans call the Bardo Tadal. You know, so you have a different viewpoint. But if you're able to find things rhythmically and by tonality, you can find your way to where you need to be. Does this make sense? So that's why I had a very strong impression that we had somebody visiting us tonight. I've had it for about 3 days now, okay, that, and things are weird enough tonight, thank God, that it kind of like underlines it for me that that's the case, because Pat couldn't make it, Ivan couldn't make it, Molly Midway couldn't make it.
So here I am, the chop liver, but happy to see you all.
You know, it's like in professional football when the star quarterback gets injured, they bring in the second team, the second string guy, and then when that guy gets injured,
we're down to the water boy.
They bring in the water boy and hope for the best.
And I thought you were bringing in the coach.
Well, there you go.
Thank you, George. You got a bunch of gold stars for that one.
Okay.
We do, but we do what we can. But we create a space sometimes because we're able to for our fellow voyagers. What? Oh, wait a minute. I'll underline that and repeat it. We create a space because we're able to for our fellow voyagers. So I met with somebody the other day, and somebody who's been on the path for a while, pretty serious person, and the question comes up, well, you know, what am I going to do with my life that's meaningful? Ivan's not here, so he can't give me the quote from Socrates, as written out by Plato. You know, the term is a life well lived. Harry could probably, or I don't know, is a Gnostic man, he'll know. I've got it written down, but I can't remember it right now. So it's, what is a life well lived?
Well, I'm going to even take it up from the Freud's perspective. He said the two things that brought meaning to life was work and love.
Work and love. So somebody did a reading for me about a week ago. It was great, and I'm glad to have reconnected with her. And I got this reading, and she said, oh, yeah, it seems like you're really coming more into yourself. And then there were a lot of other things she said about me. So I got to thinking, I said, well, what the heck does that mean? And you're coming more into yourself. And we've talked a little bit about this thing that I did about a year and over a year ago now, where I took about 6 weeks or so, and I was meditating on the whole idea of, who am I? Now, when you're sitting there looking at me, it's apparent, right? Oh, that's David. And you look and you point and you think, yeah, I know who that is. And like when I was first getting into spiritual things, I spoke with my father and I said, you know, I really like this question that, you know thyself. And he goes, well, I know myself. I'm the guy that's talking to you. And you know, he pretty much had it down. So
yeah.
It's just
a Zen master, you realize.
Yeah, well, we had a difference of opinion. But bottom line is, who am I is a very interesting question. So Spinoza, as we go back to Spinoza from time to time, and I found out that of all things, there are a few people who have heard of Spinoza. And he says two very interesting things in two totally different parts of the ethics. One, he says that the highest joy, and for him, joy is the ultimate, that's like salvation or enlightenment, okay? So that's like he called it permanent joy, you know, so it's not like a good time on a Friday night. But it's this true joy is when you're living your life in accordance with one's own nature. What's my nature? What is my nature, specifically? Because when I'm looking out, I don't see the same picture you do. When I'm looking from here out, and mostly what I see is I will always thank George for this terminology, I mostly feel a vibratory sensation. Right, George?
Absolutely. I think that's really the manifestation of that animating life force that propels us down the road of life.
It's the animating life force that propels us, and then oddly enough, it seems to be different and unique. Okay, mine seems to be, from one point of view, different. For instance, let's say than Tamara's. And name three or four people who are online right now. Pick up, do it on the phone if you would.
So Gospaltz, Rocky, Simon Templar, Lost Horizon, Shelley Boyce.
Is different than them also. And there are a couple of individuals here. But the point of that is that together we form an entity. We have the ability to form a type of an entity that then can be seen. And that's why for me, and I'm sorry that Harry, I don't know why I'll have to contact Harry, but that's why it just felt so powerful that Susan, in essence, was looking for us tonight. Okay? And we continue to get the reports that she's doing well. And what that means is that she's navigating well within the Bardos. She's going through this traverse. For some reason, I look at it like an arc. And sometimes, rarely, but sometimes I have clear and distinct visions of, yeah, that's something that happened, that I did do that. I can't grab it. And once I was sitting there with Claude and EJ, and we're the only ones in the room, and EJ says, I don't know why you guys chose not to remember. You know, but we did. I did choose not to remember. But sometimes that glimpse bleeds through in a sense. So if you have a feeling of that there's the entity, part of what you're feeling right now is the vibratory signature of somebody that had a name called Susan, then Kester, then I think you're picking something up right. I've had it for 3 days now. It's pretty strong.
That's one thing I think that makes our soul community very unique, in that there's really something for everyone, even the dead ones.
Yeah, and because then it becomes a question is, what does it mean that you're dead? And that literally means that the body is no longer the prominent force that guides anymore. There's something else. So how is it? Why, I'm not going to ask the question, why does EJ say that? Let's just assume that what he's saying is correct. My feeling is that it's correct. It just feels clear to me that she's clear in what she's doing. Not necessarily easy, but clear. There's this clarity. How is it that occurred? And I bumped into Penny earlier, and we were talking about this class, and I said, we're opening these chambers up by doing this work on this evening, and not just for this 1 hour, but when we're doing this work together, it's like we're opening the chambers up and making them available in a different way. We imbue ourselves with this reading, and when you do that, then it's hip pocket to you. It's available to you at that time of transit.
I think one of the things too, David, is when we were talking about Susan, is that she had the habit of being here. And her way of being here included her body, her mind, and her being. So that even when the body falls away and the mind falls away, the being still has that imprint to be here, to find us, to remember.
Now, the other thing that she did pretty actively, George, did you ever talk with Susan before, in the last 2 weeks before she died?
Yeah, I think I talked with her on the Friday before she passed away on that Wednesday or Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday. And what were you doing together on the phone?
Well, of course, we were doing. We did some readings together, the Clear Light Prayer, and I was just impressed with how much preparation she was putting into her passing. Just writing out instructions for her husband Dave and brother and any number of things. I was also astonished that she sounded actually quite vigorous on that Friday night. So when she passed away on Tuesday, I was actually a little surprised. But, clearly her circumstances, reached a conclusion.
So she put time and effort into this in a very vigorous manner. She was present. For instance, she couldn't do it too much in the last few months, but she likes to be on the phone and read the log, because mm-hmm. she felt like that was a post. Now think about that for a minute. She felt that was a post. It was a job that could be done, and in an invocational space, there are certain posts that unravel, present themselves, and those that are able can pick up that those post positions. So it was a way for it forced her to be more present, and she knew that from time to time I was going to say, right, Susan? And just like that, she would answer. She was put on the spot, but she put herself in a position where she was willing to be put on the spot because she wanted to be, I'll clarify, she wanted to be penetrated in her heart centrum by the work. And the only way you can do that is exactly what Freud said, right?
Yes. Work and love.
To surrender to love. And there's a form of surrender that I think is just utterly revealed in Chamber 35. It's a spectacular example of that. And I always need to clarify what I mean by surrender. In this case, I don't mean it in the way that the external world means surrender, which is to give up. I mean it's a active participation of the essential self, and the machine then comes into a form of passivity.
Receptivity.
The machine is passive so that the essential self is able finally to receive the teaching. And then the teaching goes into where it's supposed to be. So let's get it, why don't you get us started, Tamara? Read the first paragraph then of the 35.
35th chamber. If the womb still remains open and I'm about to enter, then it can still be closed by the next meditation on the illusory nature of all experience.
It's really important to understand. I think this, I've read several translations of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and I really respect what DJ has done in this particular presentation, because the chamber opens up and he says, the first thing he says, and he's so good at this, he says, where are you? Where are you? Oh, I'm in the place called, if the womb still remains open, and I am about to enter. Two different qualities, right? It's open and I'm about to enter. So it says, oh, I'm still there. So if that's the case, what's the most important thing? It seems like you need to know, recognize that. We need to recognize that that's the situation. I suspect that there's a kind of a feeling when you're, and when I say feeling, I mean I'm talking now magnetically, that when you're in that space, there's kind of a, almost like a magnetic pull, to the refuge of the womb, and that you can almost exactly feel it, but we have to discern what that might mean for us individually and specifically.
But I think the doorway exercise is a particularly good one.
What's the doorway exercise? What's the chapter of that? That's in Practical Work on Self. It's, do you have that there, Penny? Yeah, she's grabbing it. I strongly recommend that you read this.
Chapter 15.
Chapter 15, Practical Work on Self. In the Sunday class, we're probably months away from it, but anyway. 15? Yeah, but what does it say? What's the header?
It says Doorways, the practice of remembering ourselves, invoking our presences, having the continual presence of I makes a vibration of being, which gradually forms a relatively permanent crystallization called gradation of evolution.
So if we've done that work now, so in one book, E.J. Gold is saying, oh, here's how you can do it. Now, so I watch, the class was going to end in about 40 minutes or so. And then what happens is we break down. Sometimes we're able to help more of it a little bit and then turn the lights off. And then people rush out the door. And particularly like if you're getting a ride from somebody, you know. I'm going to just say it, okay?
Go for it.
Tamara puts on her, she has this coat or whatever it is, and then she, her head goes down a little bit, and she goes out the door, right?
Yes, that's right.
Just like a, she charges out the door, and I always think when I watch that, I thought, you're going into a miraculously different space.
And you know, there's a very deliberate reason for that, since you brought it up, is that one of the other things that we can do at times is when an invocational space happens, sometimes when you remain in that space, you blow off the energy.
Correct.
So there's this delicate balance between not allowing the space to down spiral and also to leave transition and voyage with great style and eloquence into the next space. So.
And intention.
And I can guarantee you when I walk through this door in about an hour from now, 45 minutes, it'll be a different experience for me. Because you brought this up.
Right.
Because you brought this up. So how do you recognize this stuff? Exactly the way that we've been doing it for the last several years. You practice it. You take the machine on the road and you practice the darn stuff. And it really does work. What we do in the class on the practical work on self thing and that Penny really was the one that got this going again about a year ago now, I think, whatever it was, is that people said, okay, here's what the chapter says now, how are you going to do it? And they say, I'm going to do it like this. And then they have to come back and report. I did do it like that, and here's my report. So what we want is we want reports from the edges. Okay? We want reports when, because you go out there, you might even live in a place called Toronto or near it, like London or something like that, or weird places like Florida. And you go out there and you're going to do stuff. What's it like? What's it like when you take and you drive it out there? And do you feel that paragraph when it says, if the womb door is still open, and
I'm about to enter.
How would would be a manifestation of I'm about to enter, Dan?
Dan, I'm thinking of an exercise that I've seen you do on a pretty regular basis when you get in the car. Do you want to share that? Because it's very relevant.
It was something I picked up in the Gurdjieff community, which is this practice of pausing when you begin an activity, or even during the activity, especially if you feel yourself being driven by the activity itself, then you just take a moment or a few moments and you pause and you collect yourself and bring your attention to the present. Bring your attention to your body and so on. Just interrupt the process, the automatic process.
Interrupt the automatic process. What do we have online then? Yeah, go ahead and read his stuff.
So first of all, Rocky says, eddies in the space-time continuum draws us into harbor. And Gephardt says, we create a space because we are able to for our fellow voyagers.
Yep.
And Simon Templar says, there must be something to that because minutes ago I finished watching at random a past video in which pretty much is our dear Susan talking about her choosing of the space where she would rest.
Wow. So that's another indication that her presence was here. He picked it up where he is.
He says, we do well in remembering the preliminary instructions of the first stage of the voyage in the macro dimensions. And Sinja Rogers has a couple of statements. What does it mean that you're dead? Good one to ponder.
Yep.
And thought about this exercise today. I have one particular doorway I have been addressing for about 20 years. And then Lorna Allen, probably in relation to the pausing or exercise, just she says, stop. Breathe.
Stop, breathe. So, if you find yourself in a mood where you're seeking refuge into closed spaces, like, oh, I'm just going to go in here for a little while, that would be an example of being drawn, potentially, the sensation called I am about to enter. Okay? So notice yourself. You see yourself being drawn into that? That's the trigger, and all we're doing is we're talking about sensitizing yourself to that phenomena of, yes, the womb door is still open, and yes, I'm wanting to be drawn into it. What's the solution? While that's going on, what's the solution? The rest of the chamber.
Yes. And I just want to add a note that to beyond the door exercise, every time we get into a vehicle, I mean, that is such a clear indication of entering into a womb and taking rebirth because all of a sudden, you know, we're going to find ourselves in another way. So there's many, many ordinary life experiences that, you know, it's not something just in this book.
Like I had a friend that was I worked with for many, many years, and he was in this same group I was in for a long time. And he finally got to a point where he could start to admit some things about himself and his character. And he said that he'd go home. He had an apartment. He lived by himself, and he said he's very big, dignified, very interesting, good-looking guy, and he'd go to his apartment. He said he'd go into his apartment, he'd open the door, he'd walk through the door, he'd turn around and close the door and lock it, lean his back against the door, and just sigh. I made it another day. Okay. So, look for the signs. look for the signs. So if there's a particular doorway you're working with for 20 years, that's a sign. That's a good thing. That means that it's up for you, that that particular doorway was built for you in a certain way.
Someone has another comment. That reminds me of the places or circumstances we choose daily to hide. It may be an activity or an action, a huge drive to do something as a hiding place.
Who said that?
Simon Templar. Oh,
thank you.
So the first thing is to recognize it, and when you see yourself in that pull, then this is a very traditional meditation to break the strength of that, because it is powerful. And the solution is very difficult. So tell us what the solution is, Tamara.
I concentrate my attention in this way, no matter.
I concentrate my attention. Go ahead.
No matter what I think is happening or what I think I see, I am only the clear, shining light.
Nice. Okay, so you know, the machine is a crafty adversary, I'll tell you, because it's always saying, well, yeah, but I've got all these problems. I'm working on the problems. I'm going to work on the problems. I've got a lot of them. But here, this author is telling us what? Stand in where? The luminous?
The clear, shining light.
Because you're able to do that. Because you're able to do that. So that's an antidote to the force of entering the womb in this hiding technology that goes on in the machine. I'm going to stand in that clear, shining light. Okay?
There's also the language is important. No matter what I think or what I think I see, I mean, it's really emphasizing the mental fear. And one of the things that I've appreciated hearing Claude say over the years is a lot of times we don't know where we are. And so.
Right. Right. So this. At the beginning of this, EJ's, if you read these chambers very carefully, he starts them off saying, oh, if you're here, then this. So right now we're given this opportunity. So, oh, if you're here with these symptoms, here's what you do. So stand. So next time you go to Whole Foods or Briar Patch or something to buy your provisions, And you're sitting there in all this activity, and then do you dare where are you reading? No matter what I'm
no matter
only,
what I think I is happening or what I think I see.
I am only the clear shining light. Okay. And then he goes on to talk about the illusions that are before us. Okay? Go ahead and jump to the next paragraph.
Yes, this is another one of the important lines for me. Whatever I have experienced on any realm is only the projection of my own consciousness.
I mean, that is such a hard place to stand in. The machine doesn't want to accept that. Because it wants to say, no, these other things out here are the cause. They're treating me like this. Dick Cheney is the cause. Hillary Clinton or the guy at the laundry, the dry cleaner, is the real jerk. Oh? What does it say again? Whatever.
Whatever.
I have experience. He doesn't seem to put a lot of limitations
right.
on it.
Right. The king is naked.
Totally. Can you and are you willing to stand there, practice this as you go out in the day, and it's going to be scary. It's really going to be nerve-wracking. Because you're right. Because you are naked at that point, and you're just this little spark of energy. And all that you've painted around you is the what you have created. Go ahead.
Yes, and then the next line. The only genuine experience I have ever had is that of being the clear, luminous void of the void. So that that covers a lot of territory.
No matter what it seems to be, that is the only reality. Only I, the clear and shining void, am real.
And that word genuine is interesting. You know, it's not the only experience, it's the only genuine experience.
And we sense that. We have a sense that as we go through our life, we kind of feel like, you know, I do a lot, you know, I feel like I'm really... I'm ingenuous a lot, you know. Whatever I do, it's like this, it's not real. And that's because I have had the experience of the genuine and what it feels like.
I remember one dream I had that was a dream that had EJ in it, and I was sort of standing at his feet, and I was weeping, saying, you know, I'm so grateful to have found something real. And there was just this, you know, sense that was like a shadow show. You know, everything else in my life was a shadow show, but this experience, you know, was real, and I was tremendously grateful for that.
Many years ago when I was in this group, I was doing a lot of meditation at the time, and I come back to the teacher and I said, you know, I've been doing all this meditation, and I said, I feel kind of like I'm nothing. I feel empty inside. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, that sounds pretty right. That's not what I want to hear. I want a pat on the head. Darn. So, context is where we are. And the solution is what Tamara is reading to us. But, man, this is a big pill to swallow.
From Rocky, all phenomena is illusion. How do we wrap our heads around that? We can't using the mental centrum. So we need to sense this another way. Sense through mood.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, and that's exactly right. And the particular kind of mood is this inner sensing of genuineness. You know, all phenomena is illusion, except that kid next door and his stupid dog. You know, It's just, the line is all phenomena. So all of these things. So walk through the day carrying that backpack and see what happens. Anything that occurs, you will have to interact. That's okay. That's correct. And you should.
Well, it kind of goes back to that thing I had said a couple weeks ago. How I approach it and work with it is this idea that I am the last one here. And all of this is being done so that I will pick up my liberation. You know, and so it creates this, you know, sense of gratefulness, you know, so sometimes it's blessing and sometimes, you know, I'm getting lessons. But it's both, it's assisting factors.
These are the assisting factors right
yes.
here.
Yes.
Right now. Mm-hmm. We're doing the assisting factors. So I'm very interested to see what happens if anybody takes this on the road and, you know, walks into their local store and only hide a clear and shining void. Oh, criminy. So go ahead. Just
no matter what it seems to be, that is the only reality. Only I, the clear and shining void, am real.
How did that end? Okay.
What good is it to desire an empty and unreal illusion? What good will it do me to cling to an unreal apparition, as if it were solid and could protect me? What am I afraid of? There is nothing real besides myself as the clear, shining light. And so, there is nothing that can hurt me because there is nothing to hurt.
This is the... What did I say in the last little paragraph there?
So the last paragraph of David's email. Today, walk forth with those thoughts and tools. Gather data about how you respond to standing in such a place. There will be fear and maybe a sense of falling. Watch carefully. Watch always. Prepare each moment for the great moment of transit.
Good.
Yes.
Wow.
That's what I was thinking.
So, I guess when you were reading, I was recalling this feeling of falling to, like, sometimes you feel like you're falling to the floor. I mean, you become, in a sense, transparent, and it is hard to navigate. But you still have the responsibility of being in the body. You still are that body. But it becomes more difficult, because you're standing in a different position. You're standing in the void, in the clear light, in the luminous existence at that moment. But nevertheless, that's how you learn some of these Voyager habits, to do it live like that. And then just skipping ahead, even the essential self itself, the void of the void, is non-existent in reality. It has been non-existent from the very beginning. Even this voice, this teaching, the necessity for it, are non-existent. There never was, nor ever will be a world, nor have there ever been or ever will be the six lower dimensions of inhabitants in which to be born. So the Voyager then is feeling these sensations of being drawn back into the womb and the security of it. But in great heroism, the Voyager stands in this position of the clear light and the luminosity that we are. You stand there and you say, everything I'm seeing, here's the default answer to that. Okay? Kind of cool. It actually is scary to do. After a while, a certain terror comes up. And if you can just persist, okay. It is okay. Go ahead.
What came to mind is that the sacrifices in the book, The Joy of Sacrifice, it seems as though all of these are also geared toward changing that habit of, you know, the sacrifice of comfort, sacrifice of desires. It's sacrificing things that would tend to draw you into a small, enclosed space.
Yeah. Good. For a sacrifice. We did that a couple of years ago. I have been walking in a dream. Dreaming as if there was a dream, resisting as if there were something to resist, but now I resist no longer, as there is no other, no karma, no self, no void, no wombs, no male, no female, no birth, no death, no labyrinth, no reality, no unreality. Only my own endlessness remaining, with no beginning and no end. Now it is finished and I am done with my desire, aggression, resistance, attractions, thoughts, experience. I am ready now to be what I am. I am that I am. There is no other.
For me, this chamber is a complete package of the teaching. I mean, it gives you very practical advice about ways of working with your life. You know, that there's nothing that can hurt me because there is nothing to hurt. You know, so you're given skills to surrender, like David was talking about. It encapsulates the mystic path for me in a very real way. I remember as a child hearing the expression, very God of very God, and just sort of falling into a mystic faint, I guess. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, not even really understanding, but somehow getting a glimpse of this. And so for me, like I had told David, this is one of my favorite chapters because it's all here for me.
So if you start to feel these sensations of fear and panic, that's a good thing. If you start to feel that as you're working specifically with this material, that's a very good thing. That means that you're surrendering appropriately and you're allowing yourself to be, in a sense, stand in the clear luminosity of objective reality. If you can start to be there a little bit, then you can begin to denote the sensations that your particular machine goes through. Your particular machine, as you're standing in that space, what do your legs feel like as you're walking along? Yeah, well, you might, you might feel like a puddle and you want to just sit down for a minute. But what would happen if you continued as a voyager through this space with that mentation? Okay? Boy, that's cool.
Well, that sums it up.
Yeah, it is.
There's a couple other important lines. I know we just have a few minutes, but I just want to, one of the other lines that stand out for me, when the belief in a centralized self is destroyed, there is nothing to be reborn. And that's an important part of this chamber. And then it goes on to say, if I am willing to renounce all experience, not only with the thoughts and heart, but also with the being, then all womb doors will certainly be closed and there will be no rebirth.
in the beginning of that paragraph says, once again, by concentrating. Right. So all the energy you have at that point in time, all the energy you have, let me give it to you again, okay? All the energy you have at that time is, by concentrating all my thoughts and beingness on this and allowing no other belief to enter into my consciousness, the reality of the womb and the fight to resist rebirth are destroyed. When the belief in essentialized self is destroyed, there is nothing to be reborn. If I am willing to renounce all experience, not only with the thoughts and heart, but also from the being, then all womb doors will certainly be closed and there will be no rebirth. That's the instruction. That's what you are looking for. That's the clarity that you can go to wherever you are at the moment. So work with that and see what happens. Okay. So, boy, you know, well, how many people are there? 10? 17 people. We have 17 voyagers there on that machine that are out there around the world somewhere, and there's 5 or 6 of us here. And the point is, all of us are data banks, and we can gather information and material that we can then share with our fellow voyagers, because we're kind of new at this. We're kind of new. So we go out in the world, we're going to practice this. We're kind of not sure what's going to happen. But what if we bring those experiences back and we say, you know what, I did do that, and here's what I saw and I noticed. Then you were acting like the seekers after the truth. We're all coming together, where we have fellow voyagers working together. When I was in L.A., I was kind of between teachers at the time, and there was a group of us that just desperately wanted to work together. And so we formed a little group, and it was called the Philosopher's Stone, and we called it a work-study group. And this is a card that I still have from them. It says, for those who are searching for truth and self-realization, the need for co-workers is as great as the need for teachers. Yeah. We are those co-workers. We're all basically beginners in a certain way in the phases that we're in now. So let's share these things together. And one of the things that was so profound, in a certain way, with Susan, is that she would say, okay, let's read now. And she had certain things she wanted to read. And I just picked that up and I said, oh, she is sensing that her machine needs help in this area, that area, and that area. So she'd call them and say, okay, let's read this chamber. Boom, we would do it. So this experience of reading back and forth to each other brings it's weaving the quilts together a little bit. And Laura 34 and I are going to take a shot at it. I've been delinquent in getting back to us to them. It's a way of getting out of your own little self for a minute, all right, in your comfort. No matter what you're doing, I don't care what you're doing or what job you got, your machine finds ways of little areas of comfort. It's not bad necessarily, but guarantee you that, but if you reach out and suddenly you get Simon Templar on the phone or on Skype or whatever, you're going to have a different experience, I guarantee you. Okay? Or somebody calls Silverdale up and there's an interchange. There's a activity that goes on. You rise to the level of that. You bring your best to that game and you do it together.
Because you're being of service. And I do want to mention another activity to be of service and work with the material is the Grants Orbrums on Tuesday night. Maybe Grant could put in a little more information about In Prosperity in the chat about it. This is an opportunity where you have the grace and opportunity to work for the benefit of others in your soul group. And you take names and you run the Clear Light Orb. And it's a very powerful practice. And I would really encourage you all to check it out.
And there's a lot of activities in the ashram, there's no question. There's people doing readings. I think the cycle for Susan is continuing for another week or two, right? 22nd chamber on now. And she just got the reading for the 35th chamber. Because I think she's in order. But that's okay. And I know that Star Ananda is doing some work on Sundays. But the point also is, those are very, very good. But also, consider, contacting each other and see what happens. Just see what happens. Okay? What else you got over there, Dan?
Well, Grocki reiterated that it doesn't say some phenomena, it says all phenomena. It is a powerful statement akin to the other one. As long as we seem to be having experience of any kind, we are still in the dream.
Yet nevertheless, we did manifest. Okay?
Then Gopal was talking about the orb runs on Tuesday, where we do orb runs as a group. And that's basically it.
Okay. So that's all we have for tonight. That was the 35th chamber. That was seriously called forth by, I believe, Susan needed some of this information specifically tonight. And because you were here and because we are here, it became available. Okay? So that's all we got tonight.
That's all, folks.
That's a wrap. We'll look forward to seeing you next week, Wednesday, right around 7 o'clock or so. Yeah, I'm driving back.
Thanks so much, David and Tamara.
Oh,
thank you, George. Good night.
Okay, good night.